The cleaving principle. The cleaving principle. How does cleaving look like in practical terms? Now, what does it mean to cleave from Genesis 2? When you cleave in terms of Genesis 2, it speaks of to adhere to stick to be attached by a strong tie to the extent that your life depends on it. That's what it means. When you are cleaving to somebody, there is a strong bond. And this bond is not just a bond that is there. It is a bond that determines your livelihood. That's what it means. When you cleave to your spouse, you are saying that the success of my life, the way my life will play out, is really determined by this cleaving. That is why in our church, we really believe that your first ministry is to your family. Then church comes second. You've got to be okay between you and your husband, you and your kids, and then the church will follow thereafter because everything stems from the cleaving. Now, it implies wholehearted commitment to each other. Wholehearted commitment to each other. It involves unwavering loyalty to one's spouse. Loyalty, trust, dependability. Can your spouse depend on your words? If you say, I'm coming at 5, will you be there at 5? Or you are known for always coming 3 hours late. Okay? How dependable are you? You know what we should do? If you say, I'm coming at 5, and you see you're running late, pick the phone and say, I'm running late. That's respect. We'll touch on respect a bit later on. That is respect. So the issue here is this. We've got to be so unwavering in our loyalty to our spouse. Your loyalty to your spouse will mean that you will defend your wife with everything that you have. Okay, I'm just saying wife, but it means husband as well. You defend your husband from your family, against your family. In other words, if there are relatives who are saying stuff about your husband, you say, no, sorry guys, you don't talk about my husband that way. It's my husband. When we got married, I've got 2 sisters, my mom, and really, I drew a line and said, if you want to touch me, touch this girl. Say stuff about my wife, you will see a side of me that you don't want to see. Okay? If you've got an issue, let's talk about it, but do not attack. Do not attack my spouse. And one of the issues we find in our relationships is when the wife says, I feel he does not protect me from his family. I feel his family is always attacking me and he says nothing. You remember what happened when we were on that outing? You remember what your mom said? We owe it to our spouse to protect them from those closest to us. So you need to ask yourself, it will prompt you to always consider the impact of an action on your union. I've got this on the slide. You ask yourself, will this action, word, decision, or attitude draw us closer together or further apart? Will it build up or tear down our relationship? Before you do anything, you've got to ask yourself this. Will this action or word or decision or attitude, so you can see there are a number of dimensions. It's what we say. It's what we express. Not verbally, but in our attitude. Okay? You need to ask yourself, will this build this marriage or it will break it? And may God help you to make the right choice. When you're able to pull back and say, I won't say that because it will shatter the marriage. It will break my wife. It will break my husband. There are so many words that we have said. You see, for every prickle, for every negative word you speak to your wife, you need 3 positives to undo it. You need to give it 3 fuzzy feelings to undo the 1 negative comment that you made. Whatever it is that you do that gets your spouse, do it 3 times for them to really feel, oh, I feel better now. Okay? Very, very important. So, a Christian marriage ought to consider any action that has potential to destroy the cleaving as contrary to God's design for a marriage covenant. Anything that threatens the cleaving process, anything that threatens our oneness, we must see it as a violation to the principle of marriage. A lady by the name of Samantha Kricher, she wrote an article. She had this to say. She says, to cleave has meant that we are now one. Think about that. To cleave has meant that we are now one. We are no longer two individuals with our separate agendas and plans. Everything we do affects one another, somehow and some way. We are now our own family, distinct from the families we grew up in. We are now one financially. We are now one in terms of career choices that we make. I have seen one of the big issues that we have around the process of cleaving is that we are still talking about yours and mine. Your car, my car. Your finances, my finances. Your kitchen, my garage. Hello? There is a problem right there. Your desk, my desk. Your laptop, my laptop. When we do that, if you're still talking in those terms, there is something lacking in the cleaving process. Your budget, my budget. I don't know how you guys manage your finances, but in our 13 years of marriage, one thing that has really worked for us financially, we still have separate accounts, okay? But we have one budget. So we put together all our expenses and we say, these are our expenses and this is the income and this is where the money is going to come from. Wifey, you're going to pay for that and that and that and that and that because we know this is how much there is in the account. And then Michael, you're going to pay for this and this, this is what we know. Okay, the remainder of the money, we put it into a savings account or an investment account or whatever it is. It's one budget. Everybody knows what goes on that budget. When we are in the negative, everybody knows how far we are in the dwang. Hello? It's not my dwang, it's our dwang. Let's deal with it. Very, very important. If there is excess money, it's our money. What are we going to do with this? That is why, personally, I struggle with people who say, I surprised my wife with a new BMW 3 Series. How did you do that? Excuse me, man. How did you pull that off? I thought it was just me. You surprised your wife with a BMW? That's great. At least he's doing something. But you see where I'm coming from here? If your finances are so open, a BMW will cost you, I don't know, 400K, 500K, right? Yeah, somewhere there, right? So where is it coming from? Were you saving all along without telling me that you're putting 10 grand aside a month to surprise me? Or you're going to have to pay 7,000 rand a month for the coming 60 months? Hello, dude, how could you do that? I don't know how they do it. That is why I'll never be able to surprise her with a BMW. We will go together, we will plan for the BMW, and we say, this is what we're going to get. It's for you, my wife. It's for you, just for you. But I can't surprise her because how do I keep that away from her? She's one difficult woman to surprise. All the surprises I tried, they fell face down. And I'm like, I'm not going to do it again. No more surprises. So I'm talking about the cleaving process brings you so together that there's no more separation. You make things so easy for yourselves, where the other person who hasn't been earning enough feels that they are lesser in their marriage because they don't bring enough. Seasons change. In this season, I might be bringing lots of money and she brings zero. But in the next season, I might be backwards and she's there pushing. Guess what? The way I treat her in my heydays will determine how she'll treat me in her heydays. So we better put it together and say, whether I am in hay or she's in hay, life goes on. Do you hear me today? This is very, very important. But that can only happen if you know your balance sheet. If you know your accounts, what's happening there. I'm surprised there are certain wives who don't even know how much their husbands earn. Guys, if you are here, please go repent. Just go tell that person, this is how much I earn. It'll be good for you. Let's do the last one and then we're going to be done with this aspect. The cleaving process, I did not go into town on that, but it's very key. If you can leave, the cleaving becomes easy. You know, everything else will sort itself out. Let's look at the implications of cleaving. So, the whole issue of cleaving really makes you, I mean, if you can look at your notes there, it prompts a realignment of priorities. It cannot be business as usual. When you are cleaving, you are realigning your priorities. Admit that you are now distinct from the families you both came from. It's no longer that's what we used to do, that's what we used to do. No, it's what we are doing now. You are building a new culture. It becomes a combo of where you're coming from. You take all the good stuff from your background and you say, we really like that. This is how we're going to do it. So it's a case of becoming unique. New norms, new preferences, and new habits. That is key. Your former primary family now belongs in the back seat. In the back seat. They are there, but they are not for much. They're not into your life. Your spouse comes first in every respect of the word. That is, you make decisions with her. You value his or her opinion more than that of family and friends. I think we've hammered that point. The cleaving process creates a deep connection that does not allow even children to come between you. Those little ones running around. Some call them little rascals. No, but I love kids. You know, they're great. But those little ones can cause chaos in your marriage. Oh, one is 10, another one is 6, and we are reminding them all the time, guys, before you were, we were. Yeah. Bernice, before you were, we were. Therefore, you're going to bed at 7 so that we can spend time together. Kids can control your life. They can run you into circles. Let me give you a piece of advice. Those of you who are about to have kids, those of you who've got kids, put your kids down as early as you can. Start early. You will thank me. Our kids, though our daughter is 10, but 7:30 she's out. Andrew, at 7:30, he's out. Guess what? From 7:30, we do our thing. Whatever thing we do. I go to homes, I'm like, this kid is running around till 9 p.m. I'm like, guys, really? How do you manage like this? Come on now, guys. Start early, guys. When you have kids, they must know. So Benice was like, Daddy, I don't feel like going to sleep. Go to your bedroom. Find something to do. It's only Friday nights that we allow them to spend more time with us. But right through the school days, 7:30, they're down. It gives us time to catch up. If you don't do that, imagine for almost 10 years, you won't be able to catch up properly because these little ones are running around you. Before they were, we were. That's the principle that we need to apply. And it has worked like a charm. You remember when we used to do cell group in our house? The times where they walk into the house, it's quiet. Where are the kids? They're in their bedrooms. What are they? They're sleeping. We would have cell group from 7. So we'd make sure that by the time the people come to our house for cell group, they're down already. And it has worked for us. If it works for me, if you try, I think it might work. There are high chances that it might work. They will cry at the beginning. They will not understand why they need to go to bed so early. But are you going to be controlled by these ones? Well, before they were, we were. Period. Okay. Okay. This is so key. Let's look at the one flesh principle briefly. We're not going to go too much into this one so that we can break. The one flesh principle, what does it mean that a man and woman become one flesh in marriage? In order for me to just save time, I'm going to read through my notes so that we can just highlight some things. The apparent way of becoming one flesh is the sexual act that happens in the marriage context. That's one of the physical ways, one of the practical ways that make you into one flesh. It's a picture of the oneness that the Bible speaks about. Remember, it's just a picture. It has an implication on how you do life. When you are one flesh, there are some things that you do. Let's just go 1 Corinthians 6:16. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? For as it is written, the two will become one flesh. So he was using an example of if you are involved sexually with a prostitute, you become one flesh with her. By implication, it is coming from a context of being intimate with your wife. That is where the oneness happens. So when you are sexually active with your spouse, in that moment of consummation, it is a picture of being one. It is a picture of being one. That is why, biblically speaking, scripturally speaking, premarital sex is sinful. We do not condone it because it is not godly. You cannot become one before you say, I do. You can only become one when you say, I do, when you are married. That is where the proper cleaving happens. Now, going back to the beginning, the term one flesh came from the account of creation of Eve. When Eve was created, remember, Adam was put to bed by God, and God took a rib out of Adam's side and created Eve. And there was a beautiful woman. And then Adam woke up, he looked at this woman, and he became poetic. I don't know why you guys are not poetic when you look at your spouses. He became so poetic. He says, wow. This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she is taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall live. That's where the process comes. So he's saying that the woman was taken out of Adam's rib. And that is where he declared that you have become flesh of my flesh. That is a picture of the oneness that we speak about. So it is very key. So the term one flesh means that just as our bodies are one whole entity and cannot be divided into pieces and still be whole, so God intended it to be with the marriage relationship. Your body is a complete entity. It's complete. So your marriage has to be complete. In the eyes of God, the moment you say, I do, and you consummate your marriage, there is that oneness that is created. So becoming one is also brought about by feeding. You look after your body, isn't it? When you become one, what you do to your body, you look after it, you bath it, you got cologne on, you groom yourself, you look great. That is what you do. Guess what? That's what we should do with our marriages. We groom our marriages. We put on cologne on our marriages so that people looking at our marriages, they're like, wow, I want to get married because that marriage gets me. Do you see how they walk together hand in hand? Do you see how they look at each other in their eyes? There's a level of intimacy there. I'm talking about putting cologne over your marriage. It becomes an aroma, a sweet essence that people smell, and then their mindset concerning marriage is changed. This one here is on the slides. The married couple starts doing things in a greater dimension of unity and may even start looking alike. They've been married for 19 years. You guys look alike. You start thinking alike. The longer you are together, you just need to look at your wife and you know exactly what she's thinking about the situation. You know? The longer you are together, you'll be knowing like, I know. And then you get home, you check notes. Like, I knew that's what you were thinking about. Because you've been with this person so long, you have shared a worldview, you have shared your value systems, that you're so together that you're not surprised by what she thinks. You know? Ah, oh, praise the Lord. Okay, let's leave it there. Okay. So we need to cleave. We need to leave, to cleave and become one flesh. It's 10:15. We started a bit late, 15 minutes late. So I just took my time. I had to pay back time. So let's do this. Let's break. And at 25 past. No, let's make it 10:30. Let's just get more relaxed. Let's grab something to eat. Let's talk. Let's fellowship. Let's get to know one another. And then from then on, we will get back into our second session.